The conduct of the executive department of the government has been in perfect harmony upon this subject with this course of legislation. The question was brought officially before the late William Wirt when he was the Attorney General of the United States in 1821, and he decided that the words citizens of the United States were used in the acts of Congress in the same sense as in the Constitution, and that free persons of color were not citizens within the meaning of the Constitution and laws. And this opinion has been confirmed by that of the late Attorney General Caleb Cushing in a recent case enacted upon by the Secretary of State, who refused to grant passports to them as citizens of the United States. But it is said that a person may be a citizen and entitled to that character, although he does not possess all the rights which may belong to other citizens, as, for example, the right to vote or to hold particular offices, and that yet when he goes into another state, he is entitled to be recognized there as a citizen, although the state may measure his rights by the rights which it allows to persons of a like character or class resident in the state and refuse to him the full rights of citizenship. This argument overlooks the language of the provision in the Constitution of which we are speaking. Undoubtedly, a person may be a citizen, that is, a member of the community who form the sovereignty, although he exercises no share of the political power and is incapacitated from holding particular offices. Women and minors who form a part of the political family cannot vote, and when a property qualification is required to vote or hold a particular office, those who have not the necessary qualification cannot vote or hold the office, yet they are citizens. So, too, a person may be entitled to vote by the law of the state, who is not a citizen even of the state itself. And in some of the states of the Union, foreigners not naturalized are allowed to vote. And the state may give the right to free Negroes and mulattoes, but that does not make them citizens of the state, and still less of the United States. And the provision in the Constitution granting privileges and immunities in other states does not apply to them. Neither does it apply to a person who, being the citizen of a state, migrates to another state, for then he becomes subject to the laws of the state in which he lives, and he is no longer a citizen of the state from which he removed. And the state in which he resides may then unquestionably determine his status or condition and place him among the class of persons who are not recognized as citizens, but belong to an inferior and subject race, and may deny him the privileges and immunities enjoyed by its citizens. But so far as mere rights of a person are concerned, the provision in question is confined to citizens of a state who are temporarily in another state without taking up their residence there. It gives them no political right in the state as to voting or holding office or in any other respect, for a citizen of one state has no right to participate in the government of another. But if he ranks as a citizen in the state to which he belongs within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States, then whenever he goes into another state, the Constitution clothes him as to the rights of person will with all the privileges and immunities which belong to citizens of the state. And if persons of the African race are citizens of the state and of the United States, they would be entitled to all of these privileges and immunities in every state, and the state could not restrict them, for they would hold these privileges and immunities under the paramount authority of the federal government, and its courts would be bound to maintain and enforce them, the constitutions and laws of the state to the contrary notwithstanding. And if the states could limit or restrict them, or place the party in an inferior grade, this clause of the Constitution would be unmeaning and could have no operation, and would have no rights to the citizen when in another state. He would have none but what the state itself chose to allow him. This is evidently not the construction or meaning of the clause in question. It guarantees rights to the citizen, and the state cannot withhold them. And these rights are of a character and would lead to consequences which make it absolutely certain that the African race were not included under the name of citizens of a state and were not in the contemplation of the framers of the Constitution when these privileges and immunities were provided for the protection of the citizen in other states. The case of Legrand versus Darnall has been referred to for the purpose of showing that this court has decided that the descendant of a slave may sue as a citizen in a court of the United States. But the case itself shows that the question did not arise and could not have arisen in the case. It appears from the report that Darnall was born in Maryland and was the son of a white man by one of his slaves, and his father executed certain documents to manumit him and devised to him some landed property in the state. This property Darnell afterwards sold to Legrand, the appellant, who gave his notes for the purchase money. But, becoming afterwards apprehensive that the appellee had not been emancipated according to the laws of Maryland, he refused to pay the notes until he could be better satisfied as to Darnell's right to convey. Darnell, in the meantime, had taken up his residence in Pennsylvania and brought suit on the notes and recovered judgment in the Circuit Court for the District of Maryland. The whole proceeding, as appears by the report, was an amicable one, Legrand being perfectly willing to pay the money if he could obtain title, and Darnell not wishing him to pay unless he could make him a good one. In point of fact, the whole proceeding was under the direction of the counsel who argued the case to the appellee, who was the mutual friend of both the parties, and confided in by both of them, and whose only object was to have the rights of both parties established by judicial decision in the most speedy and least expensive manner. Legrand, therefore, raised no objection to the jurisdiction of the court in the suit at law, because he was himself anxious to obtain the judgment of the court upon his title. Consequently, there was nothing in the record before the court to show that Darnell was of African descent, and the usual judgment and award of execution was entered. And Legrand thereupon filed his bill on the equity side of the circuit court, stating that Darnell was born a slave and had not been legally emancipated and could not therefore take the land devised to him nor make Legrand a good title, and praying an injunction to restrain Darnell from proceeding to execution on the judgment, which was granted. Darnell answered, averring in his answer that he was a free man and capable of conveying good title. Testimony was taken on this point, and at the hearing the circuit court was of the opinion that Darnell was a free man and his title good, and dissolved the injunction and dismissed the bill, and that decree was affirmed here upon the appeal of Legrand. Now, it is difficult to imagine how any question about the citizenship of Darnell, or his right to sue in that character, can be supposed to have arisen or been decided in that case. The fact that he was of African descent was first brought before the court upon the bill in equity. The suit at law had then passed into judgment and award of execution, and the circuit court as a court of law had no longer any authority over it. It was a valid and legal judgment, which the court that rendered it had not the power to reverse or to set aside. And unless it had jurisdiction as a court of equity to restrain him from using its process as a court of law, Darnell, if he thought proper, would have been at liberty to proceed on his judgment and compel the payment of money, although the allegations in the bill were true and he was incapable of making a title. No other court could have enjoined him, for certainly no state equity court could interfere in that way with the judgment of the Circuit Court of the United States. But the Circuit Court as a court of equity certainly had equity jurisdiction over its own judgment as a court of law, without regard to the character of the parties, and had not only the right, but was its duty bound, no matter who were the parties in the judgment, to prevent them from proceeding to enforce it by execution if the court was satisfied that the money was not justly and equitably due. The ability of Darnell to convey did not depend upon his citizenship, but upon his title to freedom. And if he was free, he could hold and convey property by the laws of Maryland, although he was not a citizen. But if he was by law still a slave, he could not. It was therefore the duty of the court sitting as a court of equity in the latter case to prevent him from using its process as a court of common law to compel the payment of the purchase money when it was evident that the purchaser must lose the land. But if he was free and could make a title, it was equally the duty of the court not to suffer Legrand to keep the land and refuse the payment of the money upon the ground that Darnell was incapable of suing or being sued as a citizen in the court of the United States. The character or citizenship of the parties had no connection with the question of jurisdiction, and the matter in dispute had no relation to the citizenship of Darnell, nor is such a question alluded to in the opinion of the court. Besides, we are by no means prepared to say that there are not many cases, civil as well as criminal, in which a circuit court of the United States may exercise jurisdiction, although one of the African race is a party. That broad question is not before the court. The question with which we are now dealing is whether a person of the African race can be a citizen of the United States and become thereby entitled to a special privilege by virtue of his title to that character, and which under the Constitution no one but a citizen can claim. It is manifest that the case of Legrand and Darnell has no bearing on that question and can have no application to the case now before the court. This case, however, strikingly illustrates the consequences that would follow the construction of the Constitution, which would give the power contended for to a state. it would in effect give it also to an individual. For if the father of young Darnal had manumitted him in his lifetime and sent him to reside in a state which recognized him as a citizen, he might have visited and sojourned in Maryland when he pleased and as long as he pleased as a citizen of the United States. And the state officers and tribunals would be compelled by the paramount authority of the Constitution to receive him and treat him as one of its citizens, exempt from the laws and police of the state in relation to a person of that description, and allow him to enjoy all the rights and privileges of citizenship without respect to the laws of Maryland, although such laws were deemed by it absolutely essential to its own safety. The only two provisions which point to them and include them treat them as property and make it the duty of the government to protect it. No other power in relation to this race is to be found in the Constitution. And as it is a government of special delegated powers, no authority beyond these two provisions can be constitutionally exercised. The government of the United States had no right to interfere for any other purpose but that of protecting the rights of the owner, leaving it altogether with the several states to deal with this race, whether emancipated or not, as each state may think justice, humanity, and the interests and safety of society require. The states evidently intended to reserve this power exclusively to themselves. No one, we presume, supposes that any change in public opinion or feeling in relation to this unfortunate race in the civilized nations of Europe or in this country should induce the court to give to the words of the Constitution a more liberal construction in their favor than they were intended to bear when the instrument was framed and adopted. Such an argument would be altogether inadmissible in any tribunal called on to interpret it. If any of its provisions are deemed unjust, there is a mode prescribed in the instrument itself by which it may be amended. But while it remains unaltered, it must be construed now as it was understood at the time of its adoption. It is not only the same words, but the same in meaning, and delegates the same powers to the government, and reserves and secures the same rights and privileges to the citizen. And as long as it continues to exist in its present form, it speaks not only in the same words, but with the same meaning and intent with which it spoke when it came from the hands of its framers and was voted on and adopted by the people of the United States. Any other rule of construction would abrogate the judicial character of this court and make it the mere reflex of the popular opinion or passion of the day. This court was not created by the Constitution for such purposes. Higher and graver trusts have been confided to it, and it must not falter in the path of duty. What the construction was at that time, we think, can hardly admit of doubt. We have the language of the Declaration of Independence and of the Articles of Confederation, in addition to the plain words of the Constitution itself. We have the legislation of the different states before, about the time, and since the Constitution was adopted. We have the legislation of Congress from the time of its adoption to a recent period, and we have the constant and uniform action of the executive department, all concurring together and leading to the same result. And if anything in relation to the construction of the Constitution can be regarded as settled, it is that which we now give to the word citizen and the word people. And upon a full and careful consideration of the subject, the court is of the opinion that upon the facts stated in the plea in abatement, Dred Scott was not a citizen of Missouri within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States and not entitled as such to sue in its courts, and consequently that the circuit court had no jurisdiction of the case and that the judgment on the plea in abatement is erroneous.